What's up, guys? That was one of the most genuine, heartfelt, really morbid jokes I've ever heard, Dalton. That was weird. Hopefully no one is actually dead. But there's a lot of sirens going on back there, so we got a little light show. Guys, who thinks I can see you? I can see literally nothing. Guys, these lights, like, legitimately, like, I can hear kind of noises a little bit, but, like, I can kind of tell the IMU is there, but that's it. Like, that's it. So if something strikes you, just say, like, or, you know, whatever. Like, talk a little bit. Just say stuff so I know you guys are still there. We were talking about it. It'd be a really funny joke if just halfway through all you guys left. Because, like, I wouldn't know because I can't see anything. So anyway, don't do that. Stay. You can leave soon. But anyway, we are in Genesis. We're continuing our series. And if you're here for the first time, maybe you've got a flyer or something, I'm going to give you a real quick update of where we've been in Genesis, kind of where the story's gone so far, so that you can catch up with us and kind of dive into this story that God is writing to us tonight. So Genesis 1, if you guys have read the Bible before, maybe you've heard this, you know that the story of the Bible starts in a garden called Eden. And in this Eden, God creates man and woman, Adam and Eve, in really a really beautiful, perfect harmony with him. Everything was good. The world was one where there was no evil, there was no sin, there was no death. And in Genesis 3, as the story continues, Adam and Eve, they decide to rebel against God. They sin. They choose to reject God as their creator. They try to kind of strive out on their own and kind of become something themselves. And because of their sin, God has to distance himself from them. That relationship between God and mankind, Adam and Eve and God, is severed. And they're kicked out of the garden. They're kicked out of the presence of God. And as the story goes on in Genesis 4, the very first story we read in Genesis is two brothers, Cain and Abel. Well, one of them, Cain, kills the other brother, Abel. The story gets even darker than that. It eventually says that mankind gets so bad that sin isn't just something that mankind did, but sin is something that's now in the heart of Adam and Eve and in the heart of all men and all women, that it's something that's like an infection, and it's in them now. And as you continue the story of Genesis, God looks down from heaven and he just sees that mankind is just wicked. That every single thing that happens by the hearts of men and women is just always evil continually. And so God eventually sends a flood. He destroys his creation. He starts over with a guy named Noah. And then the creation continues to go on and mankind bands together once again in unity and they build this tower in direct defiance of heaven called the Tower of Babel. These are some of the stories we've been preaching through this semester. And God told mankind, he said, here's the thing, I've given you a name. You are my creation. And what I want you to do is spread out over the whole world. And I want you to spread my glory everywhere. And so man and woman, they stay in one spot. They don't spread themselves over the face of the earth. They don't take God's name. They go and they try to make a name for themselves by building this city, by building this tower. And so God disperses the people over the face of all of the earth. And then God picks out, of all of these people groups, of all these different people, he picks out one guy named Abraham. And he picks him out and he says, okay, I'm going to pick you. I'm going to choose you. And I'm going to do something to you, Abraham. I'm going to actually bless you. He speaks a blessing over Abraham, and he says, I'm going to choose you, and I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to make you into something, Abraham. I'm going to make you into a massive, massive nation, and I'm going to bless you. But more than that, I'm actually going to use you, and I'm going to use your family to bless the entire world. Abraham has a son named Isaac, and tonight we read about this continuing line of God's people as Isaac is going to have two sons, Jacob and Esau. This is their story. Tonight we're going to see how even in God's family, sin is wreaking havoc. This is a really profoundly messed up, broken family tonight. Some of you guys came from really broken families, but we're about to read about one that is really broken as well. So here's the story tonight. I think it's really broken up into three chunks. Three different kind of like movements, chapters of this story that we're going to talk about. The first one is the birth and the birthright. The second is going to be a faithful God and an unfaithful father. And then the last thing, the deception and the blessing. So here's how this goes. Do I need to move my mic to make it better? Yeah? No? Good? Okay, does it sound fine? Oh, there's like so much feedback up here. So, okay, I can't hear or see. It's okay. We'll just keep going. It's good. Okay, the birth and the birthright. Guys, here's how this story starts. It says this in Genesis 25, 19. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. Really common theme. God takes his people and he leads them into a place of difficulty and dependence. And he puts them in a place where they have to actually seek him in order to get the things that they need. She is barren. She cannot have children. So Isaac prayed to the Lord on her behalf. And the Lord granted his prayer. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And check this out, 22, the children struggled together within her. Now, this word for struggle, this isn't just like a struggle. This is like the word for smash, okay? Like the word that you would use in Hebrew to like, you're going to smash someone's skull, like this kind of really messed up word, just like this, bleh, that's what's going on inside her. It's like reeds are breaking, like bones are breaking. This is like this epic struggle going on inside her womb. And she said, okay, if it is this way, if it's thus, why in the world is this happening to me? She's like, okay, we prayed for twins, but what is going on in here? It's not good, okay? So she went to inquire of the Lord, and this is what the Lord says to her. He says this, it's prophetic. He says, this is what's going on inside you. Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. And what he says next is profound. He says, one shall be stronger than the other, but the older shall serve the younger. Isn't very interesting to us? Most likely, we don't really care that much, but in this day and age, this is profound, this is radical, this is unlike anything that's ever happened. The older does not ever serve the younger, period. No, the older is the place of privilege, but God looks at these two people and there's going to be division. One's going to be stronger, and I'm telling you that at the end of the story, the younger one is going to be the one who gets my blessing. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. All that stuff that was going on, turns out it's actually kids, right? The first came out, this is weird, the first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. That's very disturbing. Okay, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, doesn't get any better than this. You think, okay, the first one's jacked up, second one will be better. No. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was Jacob. Okay, now Jacob literally means heel grabber. Cool name, right? Or it means heel grabber, but it also has this kind of turn of phrase that also means deceiver. And actually that kind of gives us this kind of foreshadowing of what kind of man Jacob is going to be. But I just want you to picture that for a moment, okay? This is one of the weirdest births that maybe has ever happened, okay? Like first kid comes out red, okay? Like babies always come out looking a little weird, and so it comes out red, not that weird, hairy, like a cloak, okay? Like a camel's hair covering, that's what the kid came out as. Very disturbing, even more disturbing. As they're trying to pull this kid out, right? Why is he not coming out, right? His leg's stuck inside still. And they're pulling, and eventually out comes Jacob, right? Jacob's like, no! Like, he is trying to pull him back in so that he can come out first. That's crazy! Like, he gets pulled out, he's holding onto his heel. This is one of the weirdest births that's ever happened. Very disturbing, very, very disturbing scene. And so from the very beginning of this story, we see, okay, these two sons, these two brothers are going to be very different. There is going to be anger, jealousy, and wrestling. Even from birth, that is what is going on here. And here's the very next thing that the text says in the story. It gets really sad, actually. It says, when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, right? He looks like Chewbacca. He lives like Chewbacca, okay? He's a skillful hunter. He's a man of the field. This is a man's man, okay? This is like Chuck Norris with a beard, but the beard's everywhere. So It's amazing. Esau was a skillful hunter. He was a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man. Strong contrast. He's a quiet man. He's dwelling in tents. And then look what it says next. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, the animals he would catch, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay, so picture this. From the womb, right? Desperate fight to be first. Jacob loses. Not by much, but he loses. He is second. Not only does he take second place in the family, he takes second place in his father's heart. Isaac loved who? Esau. Isaac loved Esau. And this is what happens next. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, this is later in the story. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. He's famished. And Esau said to Jacob, hey, here's the thing, man. I'm really hungry. Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Literally the Hebrew, it's very funny. He comes up and he says, let me get some of that red stuff. That red stuff. He repeats it twice, right? It's almost like he says it once and then he kind of in slow motion is just like, that red stuff. Like he's that hungry. He repeats it. Very strange, but that's what he says. Let me get some of that red stuff, for I am exhausted. Therefore, his name was called Edom. Okay, Edom means red. So, like, this guy's got, he is red, he sees red, he likes to eat red stuff, so they just called him Red, okay? The Bible's funny. I don't know. That's just, therefore, his name was called Red. So, Esau comes out of being in the wilderness, right? You don't go to a grocery store on that day, right? He goes out, he's been out for maybe days, he comes back, he's very, very, very hungry. He himself thinks, like, I'm on the verge of dying, so I need some food. Let me eat some of that red stuff. Look what Jacob says. Jacob said, really quickly, sell me your birthright now. He's prepared for this. He says, sell me your birthright now. Jacob, the deceiver, he has been calculating this moment for a long time. He lost the battle at birth, but he was going to win the battle today. Oh, you want this food? You want this soup? But I just conveniently am preparing at the edge of the wilderness right now. You want this? Sell me your birthright. Birthright. We don't really care about birthright. We don't think about this much, but in this day and age, this is everything, right? The one who came out of the womb first, the son who was born first, he had a tremendous privilege in life. Honor in the community, status in the family, and inheritance. The firstborn son would get a double portion of all of the inheritance. So if you have four kids, four sons, and you're splitting the inheritance between these four sons, the first son would take two portions, and the other three would have to split the two. So if you were the firstborn son, this was a really big deal. And in this situation, it was an even bigger deal, because what you would do if you had two sons is you would split the inheritance in two and the firstborn would take both. This birthright meant a tremendous amount for these two sons, but it actually meant even more for these two specific sons, because whose son are they? Isaac. Whose son is Isaac? Abraham. This is the family of God. This is the family that God, Yahweh, has come down from heaven and has specifically chosen and spoken a blessing, a promise to, and saying, I'm going to bless you and make you into my nation, my people. I'm going to bless the entire world through you. This was not just an inheritance of money. This was a spiritual inheritance. And Esau says, I'm very hungry. I'm famished. I'm about to die. And Jacob says, sell me your birthright now. What does Esau do? Well, Esau says this. He says, well, I'm about to die, so what use is a birthright to me? Jacob said, swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. It's a strange story, but the narrator kind of helps us get a lens on how we're supposed to view it. He ends the story and he says, he doesn't end it saying, okay, thus Jacob stole Esau's birthright, right? Thus Jacob tricked Esau, or he conned him. That's not how the story ends. No, the story ends saying, thus Esau despised his birthright. Even though the story kind of presents Jacob as this cold, calculating, cheating brother, Esau is the one that ultimately receives the final critique. This is what it says in the New Testament, Hebrews 12:16. It's talking to God's people today, and it's looking back on this story, and this is what it says. It says, make sure that no one is immoral or godless like Esau. Very strong words. Make sure no one is immoral or godless like Esau, who traded his birthright as the firstborn son for a single meal. The New Testament looks at this and it says, hey, Christian, you need to look at this story and you need to think about this story. There's something here for you. It says Esau was immoral, he was godless. Why? Because Esau was the kind of person that would put a single meal in front of the promises of God. He's the kind of person that would choose immediate physical pleasure instead of the lasting spiritual blessings of God. This story is meant to be a little stunning, that Esau would be so flippant, so dismissive, that he would make such a bad decision. Esau trades the forever blessing of God for a plate of beans. Do you guys check that out? It's not even red stuff, okay? It's beans. It is lentils, right? This happens to us, doesn't it? Like he comes out, he's hungry, he has an appetite, his passions are alive in him for food. And he sees this and he goes, oh, I just need that red stuff. I need it now. If I could only have that, it would be amazing. And he eats, and as soon as he's finished with his decision, the author kind of reads us what Jacob gave him, bread and lentils, right? Like we see something on the front end of sin, on the front end of this kind of small pleasure decision, and it looks amazing and our mouth waters and we salivate and we go, oh, if I could only have that, and on the back end of it, it doesn't look so good, does it? No, that's exactly what happens here. This red stuff turns into a bowl of beans. Not something you should trade the forever future of God for, but Esau does. So birth and birthright, that's the first section. The second chapter, the second movement, it actually is going to transition. It's going to talk to us about Isaac. These are the two sons, but Isaac is the father, and Isaac actually plays a really significant role in the brokenness of this family that we're reading into and we're going to continue read into. This is the second thing, a faithful God and an unfaithful father. So the very next thing that happens in chapter 26 is there is a famine in the land. This happened in Abraham's time, and it happens again in Isaac's time. And so Isaac goes, and he begins to seek a place where there is no famine. He begins to try to provide for his family, and God meets him in a very profound way. God meets him in the same way that he met his father Abraham, and he actually gives him the same blessing that he gave his father. He takes him out, and he says, look at the stars. Do you see how many stars there are? He goes, I'm going to make you into a nation that outnumbers those. As many stars are in the sky, that's how many people are going to come from you, Isaac. I am going to bless you, and I am going to bless the entire world through you. God reaffirms his promise, not just to Abraham, but to Abraham's son, Isaac. And then in verse 6, we read this. So Isaac receives this blessing, and he's in the middle of this famine, and he settles in this land. It's called Gerar or Gerar. I have no idea how to say that. Gerar, I'm just realizing that. I'm like, hey, I should have looked that up. Gerar, okay, that's what we're going to go with. So Isaac settled in Gerar, and then look what happens next. God gives him the blessing, gives him the promise, I'm with you, Isaac. And then verse 7, when the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, my wife, thinking, well, what if the men of this place should kill me because of Rebekah? Because she was attractive in appearance. And when he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out a window. When he had been there a long time, this guy looks out the window and he sees Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife. Okay? Weird. Okay? Kind of weird. What does that mean? One option, Isaac's very good at telling jokes, okay? He's very funny. Probably what this means is kind of like a Hebrew euphemism, like laughing is a little more than laughing, you know? Like you bust in on like your roommate and his girlfriend's over and like they kind of like throw their head up and they're kind of like, you know, flush, red in the face, and there's kind of like moisture in the air and you're like, what's going on? And they're like, we were laughing. We were laughing together. It was very funny. So that's probably more what's going on here. I don't know if they're like making out on a roof or something, but anyway, he sees them doing something that basically tells Abimelech, hey, this isn't your sister, because you don't do that with your sister. This is your wife, right? And so Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, she is your wife. How then could you say that she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, well, because I thought that I might die because of her, right? He's thinking, well, she's really beautiful. I thought that if I came and said she was my wife, you were going to probably kill me and take her. And so Abimelech says, what is this that you have done to us? One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. So Abimelech warned all the people, and he says, whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. This is the exact same thing that happened to Abraham twice. Abraham failed in this exact same way two times, and now Isaac is doing the same exact thing. He's a coward. He's not living to protect his wife and her dignity. No, he puts her out to dry, and he goes after his own safety. But look what happens right after this, right after Isaac's failure. Verse 12, and Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold, unimaginably good harvest. The Lord blessed him, and the man became rich, and he gained more and more until he became very wealthy. Eventually, at the end of this section, Abimelech is going to come to him, and he's going to say, please leave our land. You are much greater than we are. God has grown you and blessed you so much that you're like taking over our land. So could you go? You are a greater man than we are. You are more blessed than we are. Would you please go? A few observations. One, apparently part of the blessing of God is having a smoking hot wife. Weird. Do not understand it, but this keeps happening over and over and over again where the dudes of God go into a land and they're like, my wife is so stinking smoking hot. If I do not say she's my sister, I'm going to die. Okay, so that just, I don't know. That just keeps happening. So that is one good gift of God, I guess. Anyway, the sins of Abraham become the sins of Isaac. This is more serious. The sins of Abraham become the sins of Isaac. Like Abraham, Isaac also doesn't fight for the dignity and value of his wife, but he hangs her out to dry to protect himself. This is amazing. Like if you really think about this, like what kind of man would do this? Who would come into a land and he would say, hey, I know that we're together as covenant partners in marriage, but can you just for a while pretend to not be my wife? And yes, maybe you'll have to sleep with someone. And yes, maybe you'll have to even like get married here, but we'll kind of figure it out later. Like, are you kidding me? Isaac is a coward. He's more concerned with his safety than the safety of his wife and his family. And yet at the end of this story, God still blesses him. There's two men, Abimelech and Isaac. Abimelech in this story is righteous, he is good, he is just. Isaac is sneaky, he's foolish, and he's selfish, and yet God chooses to bless Isaac and not Abimelech. Why? Because God choosing to bless you has nothing to do with the life you live. It has nothing to do with it. Actually, the New Testament, when it looks back on this story of Isaac and even the story of Jacob and Esau, this is the point the New Testament makes. It says, hey, look at these people. They're really jacked up. Look at Jacob and Esau. God decided on that before they were even born. The point of the New Testament, when it looks back on this section, is it says, God's grace, when it comes to a person, it has nothing to do with you, and it has everything to do with God. Isaac is, by every possible stretch in this story, a worse person than Abimelech. Yet he is the one who receives the blessing. He's a piece of trash husband. He's a piece of trash father. And we should just be honest about that. He is. He really is. And a lot of the story of Genesis is going to have people just like him standing in the place of God's family. And yet God chooses him. God says, you're going to be the one that I'm going to build the family of God through. You are going to be the one I'm going to bless the world through, Isaac. And I don't know about you, but this kind of thing really comforts me a ton. a lot of us, we feel because of the lives that we've lived, or we feel like because of the lives that we are currently living, that we are just a little bit too far from ever actually experiencing the blessings of God. And I think that one of the reasons that God chose a family like this, and we're going to get into it even more, it gets even more jacked up. I think the reason he chose people like this is so that people like us would look at them and think, well, if God can use that kind of person, maybe, just maybe he can use me. And the answer of Scripture is yes, he can. It doesn't have to do with you. It has to do with how powerful is his grace, and his grace is very, very strong. So Isaac is an unfaithful father, and he is an unfaithful husband, but despite of his sin, Isaac has a God who remains faithful to him. And this brings us to the third section, and really the intense section here, the deception and the blessing. So Isaac lives his life. He eventually becomes an old man. He eventually gets to the point where he is blind and he is on his deathbed, and he needs to pass down this blessing, this spoken promise of God, down to his son. He needs to bless his sons before he dies. So in chapter 27, this is what happens. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau his son, and he said to him, "My son." And Esau answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I don't know the day of my death, so do this. Take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. And prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, and that my soul may bless you before I die." Now, what is going on here? Well, this is not supposed to happen this way. No, the way you give a blessing in the Old Testament times is you would bring the entire family together, and you would bring all your sons before you. The whole family would come together, and you would take your sons, and yes, you would bless the firstborn son with the greatest blessing. But then you would go down the line, and you would say, "And for you, my son, this is the blessing you receive. And for you, this is the blessing you receive." You would bless all your sons. Isaac doesn't do this. He sets up a secret meeting where he can give the entirety of the blessing to Esau only. It's very deceptive what he's doing. And so he has this plan, and he sends out Esau. He says, "Go get some game, and we'll do this kind of secret blessing ceremony, just me and you, the son that I love." Well, Rebecca, his wife, is listening. And Rebecca hears this plan, right? She hears it, and she goes to Jacob, the son that she loves, and she says, "Jacob, this is about to happen. Your father Isaac is about to give Esau all of the blessing, and this is the blessing that you've deserved your whole life. You're a better son than Esau ever was. I love you. I want you to have the blessing." And so she begins to devise this plan. She says, "Go into our flocks, pick out two young goats, and I'll make them for your father." First thing I noticed, what kind of man eats two goats? Are you kidding me? You know how big a goat is. So I don't know. I mean, it doesn't say why Isaac is in a bed. Maybe he is just massive at this point. We don't know. Okay, but he eats two goats. So whatever. Okay, but anyway, go get two young goats. Go get them. We are going to make the kind of food your father loves. I know how to do it. I know how to do it in the way Esau does it. So we'll do that. And then actually what we'll do is we'll take your brother's clothes. The clothes that he goes hunting with, the clothes that smell like him, we'll put those on you, and you're going to go into his room, and you are going to pretend to be Esau, and he will bless you instead of Esau. And Jacob's like, "No, this isn't going to work. You don't understand. What if he feels me? What if he feels me? Remember that freak thing that came out of the womb that's all hairy? Remember that?" Jacob's like, "That's not going to work. If he feels me, I'm a smooth man, probably just like a normal man, right?" And Esau is not, right? And so she goes, "Well, here's what we'll do." So this is actually what they do. It is unbelievable. They take these young goats and they skin them, and his mom puts the goat fur like on him, like puts the goat skin and fur here. What kind of man has goat fur on them? Like, can you, I mean, and on like his neck and on and every kind of everywhere, it's like that is... That's the story. Esau must have really been a train wreck, guys. I mean, seriously, very, very strange. But anyway, that's Rebecca. That's the plan. So gives him the food, puts him in Esau's clothes, wraps him around in goat skin, sends him into his father. So he went into his father and said, this is verse 18. So he went into his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am. Where? He said, here I am. Who are you, my son? First question, right? Here I am, but who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. Just blatant lie. I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game that your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, how is it that you found this so quickly? Like, I just sent you out and you need to go hunting. How is it that you've gotten this pulled together so quickly? And look what Jacob says. He answered, oh, it's because the Lord your God granted me success. Then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not. Isaac is blind, but he is not stupid. So Jacob went near to his father Isaac, who felt him. And he said, okay, this voice is the voice of Jacob's, but the skin and the hands, they are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him and he said, one last time, he's about to give the full blessing. And he says, are you really my son Esau? He won't let Jacob do this easily. Are you really my son Esau? I am, he answered. Then he said, okay, bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you. So he brought it near to him and he ate and he brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. So he came near and kissed him. Jacob, he deceives his father with a kiss. So he came near him and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments, his brother's clothes, and he blessed him. He said, oh, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let the people serve you and let the nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you and blessed be everyone who blesses you. And as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. That's all we'll read for now. Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He comes in. Esau makes his father food, brings it in, says, hey, I'm here, Dad. Isaac freaks out. Who are you? And he goes, I'm your firstborn son. I'm Esau. What are you talking about? And he goes, well, then who was it that I just blessed? And they figured out. They figured out it was Jacob. Isaac is livid. He is so frustrated. Esau is screaming. Esau is crying. Is there any possible way you can bless me too? And Isaac knows, no, there's not. I gave everything. I gave the full blessing to who I thought was you, and we were deceived by your brother Jacob. I have nothing left to give you, Esau. And verse 41 says this, now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. His father's going to die soon. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. This is a profoundly broken family. Profoundly broken family. Isaac, he tries to cheat the system so that his favorite son, Isaac, will get all the blessing. Rebecca tries to cheat the system so that her favorite son, Jacob, will get all the blessing. Jacob lies, deceives, cheats his blind father on his deathbed. And then Esau, filled with revenge, seeks to kill his brother. One of the things that we have to see in this story, one of the things that we really need to see is that your sin does not just affect you. Your sin and your choices and the life that you choose to live does not just affect you. The decisions that you make don't just affect your life, but they affect the trajectory of your family for generations. Years ago, remember Abraham? the guy that God first blessed, well, his sins came back to bite this family. Abraham wouldn't fight for the dignity of his wife. Instead, Abraham prioritized his comfort over the safety of his wife. So decades later, who does the exact same thing? His son. Like father, like son, he walks in his footsteps and does the exact same thing. Division is born. Unity is destroyed. Husband and wife are not on the same team anymore. How can Rebecca trust Isaac anymore? Twins are born. They each put their hope in one of the children. Both children are loved and adored by one parent and despised by the other. Jacob learns deceit and manipulation from his mom. Esau learns to be impulsive and prioritize comfort from his father. That's why he loses the birthright so impulsively. Years go by, deceit, bitterness, resentment grow, and eventually one brother decides that he's going to kill the other. Generational sin. Sin from a grandfather that affects a father that affects their sons. Isaac, Rebecca, Jacob, Esau, there is no innocent party. One of the interesting things that you could do on your own is actually look through every single person in this story. There are profound things to learn about how we should live our lives by watching the way these people live their lives and by doing the opposite. We could look at everyone in the story, but I want to just look at Jacob. Jacob is such an interesting character, and he's going to be the character that we follow for the next few weeks in Salt Company as we follow the story of his life to the very last pages of Genesis. Jacob was struggling for blessing from the very day he was born. No, he was struggling for blessing even before he was born. From within the womb, he was struggling to be blessed. He came out second. His bigger, stronger, significantly hairier brother got there first, right? And from that moment on, Jacob would never be good enough. From the moment he came out second, he knew, and he was like, no! He came out second from that very moment. For the rest of his life, he would never be good enough. He wasn't a good hunter like his brother. He couldn't cook like his brother. He wasn't strong like his brother. And his father didn't love him like his brother. Jacob wants blessing more than anything. He wants to receive the blessing and the words of affirmation of his father more than anything else in his life. And when he can't get it naturally, he begins to live out his name, deceiver. Right? He manipulates the impulsive, foolish character of his older brother, gets his birthright, and then he manipulates his blind, impulsive appetite of his father to get the blessing. I want you to sit in that scene and just think about it for a second, because that is a very, very strange scene. You are in front of your blind father, dressed in your brother's clothes, and he says, "Who are you? Are you really my son Esau?" And Jacob says, "Yes, I am." And Isaac eats the food, he drinks the wine, he pulls his son in for a kiss, and he smells his son, and then he pronounces the blessing. He says, "Oh, this is my son. This is the smell of a field that's been blessed. Oh, I love you. I bless you. You are unique. You are special. I am so proud of you, and you are going to do amazing things in your life, my son." Finally, right, Jacob hears the words that he's been wanting to hear for his entire life. He finally hears them from his father. But the words sound hollow, don't you think? Considering the circumstances, Jacob isn't hearing these words as his father looks into his eyes. He is hearing these words from a blind man who thinks he is someone else. How ridiculous is this scene? I mean, genuinely, he is trying to manipulate an old blind man by wearing clothes that are too big for him and goat skin around his necks and his arms. That's very strange. I realize I just said necks plural. That's maybe even stranger. He only has one neck, but he's got goat skin on it, right? Now, that's one of the most ridiculous scenes in the entire Bible. This man is wearing a goat, and he is trying to convince his blind dad to speak words of affirmation to him that he's always wanted his entire life while pretending to be his brother. Very strange. That would make an amazing SNL short sketch, I think. It seems so completely ridiculous, but here's the thing. The more I've looked at the story, the more I've just sat in it and looked at what Jacob is going through, this is actually a lot more familiar than I originally thought it was. This story is actually more familiar. Do you ever feel like this? Like Jacob here? And I don't mean like the goat skin and all that stuff. No, I just mean like that you are spending your time pretending to be someone that you're not. You're spending your time pretending to be someone that you're not in actuality because you think that maybe if you pull this off, maybe if you convince the right people that you're really this person you're trying to pretend to be, that maybe, just maybe, you will finally be able to hear the words you've always wanted to hear. Jacob, he wants to be blessed. He wants to be approved of and loved and praised, but he isn't strong. He isn't first. He isn't the best. And so Jacob does what we all do in this situation. He begins to deceive. And he begins to pretend. And he turns himself into the kind of person that he thinks will get the blessing he wants so bad. So he ends up dressing up in a ridiculous disguise. But I think that actually a lot of us, we end up dressing up in ridiculous disguises ourselves as well. You know, I think some of us in this circle here tonight, my guess is that some of you guys, you go and you put on a short skirt and you put on a really low-cut top and you go out to the bars each weekend because you think that this is the kind of person that will get the blessing. And you want so badly to hear a guy say that you're beautiful and that he wants you, so you put on this disguise and you go out looking for those words that you so long to hear from someone. It's not really you, but you think that maybe if I do this, I'll hear what I want to hear. Some of you, you stay in the library till closing time every night, right? You don't even like your major. You don't want your career, but you think that if you can just get that job, then maybe dad and mom will finally speak the word to you that you've been longing for your entire life, that they're proud of you, that they love you, that you're doing a good job. So you pretend to be a doctor, you pretend to be a microbiologist, hoping to hear the words you want to hear. Some of you, you wake up really early in the morning and you read your Bible, right? You don't cuss, you don't drink, you don't go to the bars. The disguise that you are wearing is the Christian disguise. You think if you live a certain way that you will hear the praise of God and the praises of the people around you in Salt Company, and that you pretend to be a much holier person than you really are so that you can hear the words of affirmation you want to hear. Do you ever wear a disguise like that? Maybe those aren't yours, but do you ever find yourself in that scene that Jacob's in? He's wearing clothes that aren't his. It's like comical, the situation he's put himself in, because he's so desperate to hear the words he wants to hear. I think that Jacob's life is a lot more like ours than we think. And I also think that the great irony of Jacob's life is actually the great irony of our lives as well. Jacob, he swindles his brother out of his birthright. He deceives his father into giving him a blessing. And later in the story, Jacob will actually meet God in the middle of the night, a night just like tonight. Stars, Jacob, mano a mano with God. And the same wrestle that Jacob has had with everyone in his life, he will end up having that same wrestling match with God. And he literally wrestles him all night long. And God says, I gotta go. It's getting light out. And Jacob holds on to him. He says, no, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. I will not let you go until you bless me. And the irony of this moment and the irony of Jacob's entire life is he is cheating and he is deceiving and he is struggling with every single person around him in order to get a blessing when his entire life, the blessing of God, was already on him. Remember that? That prophecy at the very beginning? God says, hey, I pick Jacob. I choose him. I choose the younger one. That's who I'm blessing. Jacob spent his entire life trying to get what God had already freely given him. I think that a lot of us are like this. We are running throughout the world. We are pretending. We are cheating. We are doing whatever we can. We are struggling to get a blessing when actually there is another older brother who has already given us what we are looking for. You see, what the gospel does is it introduces us to a different older brother, not Esau. It introduces us to a different older brother, the true older brother that all of us have, whose name is Jesus. You see, unlike Esau, this brother, he would not sit alone in the privilege of his father's love, but this brother would give up his privilege so that he could share the father's love with us. This brother wouldn't struggle and fight to keep the blessing for himself, but he would struggle and fight to figure out, how can I give the blessing to you? Unlike Jacob, this brother wouldn't pretend to be something he is not to steal the blessing from us, but this brother would pretend to be something he is not so that he could take the curse from us. This is what Jesus was doing on the cross for us. The firstborn, the blessed, the Son of God was trading places with you. Exactly as you are right now. Isaac didn't get picked because he was a good man. Exactly where you are, the firstborn blessed Son of God was trading places with you. He became the deceiver and the cheat. He became your unique sin. And the reason he did this on the cross was so that you could become the one that the Father loves, so that you could become the one that the Father is proud of, so that you could become the one that God would pronounce a blessing on. So many of us in this circle tonight, we have spent our entire lives trying to pretend and steal our way into the blessing, when all along we have had a brother who had already given up his blessing so that we could have it. And that's the good news of the gospel. That's the good news of the gospel, is that the real older brother we have isn't Esau. He's not Esau, it's Jesus. That's the true older brother that all of us in this room can have as our real older brother if we want him. And I want you to just think about this. How would our lives change if we really believed this, that this was the brother we had, that this was the kind of brother we had? How different would Jacob's life have been if he really believed this, that he didn't need to fight for approval and blessing from the world and the people around him, because the real approval he was looking for and the real blessing from God that he was struggling for, his true elder brother had already given it all to him. I think that it would have changed everything for Jacob. And I think that if we become the kind of people who believe that, it would change everything for us too. Let me pray for us. Jesus, you are presented to us in Scripture as the firstborn, blessed Son of God. And when we look at the cross, we see a picture of you not holding back the blessing from us, not sitting in the love of the Father by yourself, but we see you coming out of heaven to earth, coming out of your position of privilege so that you could shower us with blessing. God, we are all Jacobs in this room. God, we're not the firstborn. We're not the best. We're not the strongest. But in your grace, you sent your Son to die on a cross so that we might be able to share in the blessing of God. And I pray that tonight, as we sing praises to that older brother, the one who gave up everything for us, would you fill our hearts with awe and wonder that our story is not one where we have to cheat and deceive and fight to get a blessing, but the blessing that we wanted our whole lives has already been won for us. It's been given to us, and it's not a disguise we put on. It's a new creation identity that we get to wear for the rest of our lives. It's the real us now. And those words of the Father, they do not fall hollow. but they are real, because when you say that you are my son I love, you look at us with wide eyes and you know us to our souls. You know us, you love us, and it's because we approach you through Jesus. God, help us worship you tonight. In your name, amen.